It's a great pleasure to welcome to the conversation Remo Uherek, a private investor based in Basel, Switzerland, so almost my neighbor. Remo is a value investor, blogger, and former startup founder. He likes both Graham's deep value and Fisher's growth approaches. He also writes a blog and personal newsletter. I encourage everyone to take a look at remo.org. And Remo also writes about the journey to the good life, health, wealth, love, and happiness. And Remo, recently you launched a book series. These are kind of short format books, so not as long as you might typically think of a book, but tons of wisdom in there. I'd love to just hear from you why you decided to actually put that out there, and we can delve into some of the subject matter as well.
Absolutely, my pleasure. So, Warren Buffett has this story that if you could only have one car for your whole life, that you'd better study the manual very carefully and take good care of the car. So I asked myself, I only got one life, so where is my manual? So that's where it all started. So I'm basically writing a manual for my own life, and I'm basically collecting ideas, wisdom, heuristics, test them out if they are useful. And if they are useful, I put them into my handbook. So I'm primarily writing it for myself. But then at the same time, I also thought to myself, I don't see a reason why I shouldn't publish it. It could be useful to other people as well. So that's why I started working on this series, which is, as you said, a collection of very short handbooks. Usually you can read it in 30 minutes or less. Basically, I want to write one for each major area of my life, encompassing my whole good life mantra, health, wealth, love, and happiness. And the first book I wrote on mental health, because I believe that mental health is still a topic that is not very much talked about. And I really see it as one of the major challenges that humanity or the modern society faces. So that's why I chose this topic. And I wrote a book about how I dealt with my own periods of darkness and suffering, depression, anxiety, all of those things, and just summarized all the tools that helped me.
And I really appreciated just the honesty that you brought to this and the openness in talking about, especially in this first book in the series, a topic that's often kind of put under the rug and not really talked about openly. You have some great advice in there, some heuristics. Can you highlight a couple of things for our listeners, please?
Absolutely. So basically it's three parts. So I basically attacked it from the angle of somebody who's really in a dark spot right now, who really is suffering right now. And what I discovered when I read other self-help books, that a lot of other books just start like with a study. Study A said this and study B said this. And I really don't care because I'm suffering and I want to have help. So I attacked it from that side and really give you tools to first get out of the darkest spot. And for me, what worked best is, for example, doing a brain dump. So just taking a sheet of paper and just write down all of the things, all of the sorrows and problems that I face right now, just to get it out of my system. And it's basically part of a journaling habit, but just the very first step, just put all your problems onto a sheet of paper. Because what I discovered is, or what I experienced, that a lot of those problems are negative spirals. So the more you are in your head, the worse it gets. So basically, the idea is to put it out of your head. And then another thing that I discovered is when you are in your head a lot, then you're not taking action. And basically, one of the best cures for suffering is to act, to do something. So I urge my readers to just try and get the momentum going by just doing their bed or taking out the trash and just get the ball rolling with something. And once they are out of this darkest spot, then they can really start start working on themselves. And one of the best habits that I started to do that is really journaling. Just every day get into a habit of asking myself questions. So I started to ask myself questions. What is important in my life? What is the most important thing in my life? And I ask myself this question every day and answer it every day. And then I just do freestyle writing, and it just helps me get out of my head. And yeah, basically these are two tools that helped me a lot. But then what I'm working on right now and what I'm passionate about the most right now is that I discovered that the biggest problem actually for me is a kind of cognitive dissonance. Whenever my actions or my reality is in conflict with my ideas, and then I have this conflict in my head, and it causes these negative spirals, and I'm now working on studying the subconscious mind, and working on my self-image and resetting this self-image, and I have this idea or this theory that really the subconscious. Is at the root cause of a lot of these problems. So I also talk about that in the book, but that's also what I'm studying right now.
Can we go just a little bit deeper on that topic of the subconscious mind? I mean, how does one even begin to access the subconscious mind?
So the way I learned about it is from two books. The one is by Dr. Maxwell Maltz. He wrote a book called Psycho-Cybernetics. And the other one is Émile Coué, a French pharmacist, I think he was, that worked a lot on these ideas. And actually, I got it from Arnold Vandenberg and another MOI friend, Serge Belinsky. They recommended those books. And basically, the subconscious mind is just a series of habits that you have, just automatic mechanisms. It's described as an automatic creative mechanism, or an automatic success mechanism, or an automatic failure mechanism. So basically, you can see your subconscious mind as an automatic computer in a way, and your cognitive mind as the control person for this computer. So with the cognitive mind, you basically give all the goals or you program your computer, and then the computer just basically does what you tell it to do in an automatic way. So and the other thing that I learned is that there is a difference between willpower and this automatic mechanism. And willpower doesn't work. Actually, willpower interferes. Willpower is not needed. And actually, the more willpower you put into controlling your subconscious mind, the less you can actually control it. So the key, as I'm learning it, is to relax, to learn to relax, to learn to trust your subconscious mind, and then to, in a very fine-tuned way, feed it with the goals and the images that you want to have, and then just relax and let the automatic mechanism take over. It's very fascinating. And the book says that basically 90 to 95% of our behavior and our feelings and our responses are these habitual automatic mechanisms. So I'm really motivated to learn about this because I feel like I can access like 95% of the potential that I wasn't able to access before. And that's why I'm now focusing so much time on it to really learn and master it.
And that's the Maxwell book you're referring to?
It's mainly the Maxwell book, yes.
Interesting. Well, it's certainly a fascinating topic. We could go a lot deeper. But for this conversation, I'd like to touch on a few other topics. You also talk about fixing one's sleep. Tell us a little bit more about that and the significance of it.
Yeah, so what I discovered, I was feeling for a long time, especially during my startup days, I was just feeling miserable. I was feeling exhausted and stressed and always like on the edge. And now when reflecting back on it, I just discovered that a lot of it was just chronic lack of sleep, as simple as that. And a couple of years ago, I realized it and read some books about sleep and really learned about the importance of sleep. And then I basically fixed my sleep. And it had a big effect because sleep affects your cognition, sleep affects your creativity, sleep affects your mood. So it's a whole range. And sleep is not just to rest the body, but it's basically a vital, it has a vital function for organizing the brain. So basically what I did is I went deep in it and read the books. And now I really try to go to bed. It doesn't always, I'm not always successful in it, but I try to go to bed before 11 p.m. because the book showed me that between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., you basically have the most regenerative sleep. And then during the morning times, you have the REM sleep that really much, very much helps with the cognitive functions. So you really want to get the early sleep, but then also the later stages of sleep. So you have the deep sleep in the first part of the night, and then the REM sleep in the towards the morning, and that really helped. So I just started some small habits. For example, I turn off the light after 8 p.m. I even brush my teeth in the dark because I learned that light basically stimulates your circadian rhythm. And whenever it's dark, basically you start to get tired. So I switch off the light and I turn off all my screens like at 9 p.m. and really try to make a routine out of going to bed, and that helped me fall asleep easier. The better duration of the sleep really helped me get more productive during the day. So I stopped completely with all my stimulants. I always stimulated myself with like energy drinks and things like that. I completely stopped that. So I cleaned my system. And now I feel much better. So I would really much recommend to really invest the time into sleep, because as I heard somewhere, basically common wisdom that we spend a third of our lives in bed. So it's really a worthwhile investment to learn about this third of our life in a more deeper way. And just two books to recommend. One was Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, and the other one was Sleep Smarter by Shane someone. But these two books really, really helped me fix my sleep.
Is this something that now you are just consistently doing exactly the way you want it to go, or do you find yourself still falling back to some not so great habits, and to what extent is sleep something where it's just now become automatic and it's, you know, going exactly the way you want it to go?
Yeah, it's always, I would say life is always a process, right? And life is always going in waves. You have some better periods and some more challenging periods. So of course it's the same with my sleeping habits. Some nights it's perfect and other nights not as much. But it really helped me just to understand the sleep better. And one other data point I learned from why we sleep is that even 1 hour less sleep is basically equivalent to being intoxicated with alcohol to a certain extent. So it's basically when you have 1 hour not enough sleep, you're basically going to work in an intoxicated way. And that really opened my mind that it's not just being lazy, lying in bed and just resting the muscles, but it's really a vital function if I want to be productive, if I really want to be useful, if I really want to create things in my life, then it's the best investment I can make. And that motivates me, even if I fall off the bandwagon, to always easily get back on track. So in general, I would say my grade is much, much better with my sleeping, but of course it's always a process.
It's interesting because there have been a lot of articles written on hacking sleep and sleeping as little as possible. I think that's now going in the other direction where people are recognizing the importance of sleep. But there was definitely, it seems, some, fetishism around how little can one sleep in order to increase one's productivity.
Absolutely. And I think Leonardo da Vinci, I also read some sleep studies and tried all kinds of things. I think Leonardo da Vinci, I think, had this method that he slept every 4 hours, like a 15-minute power nap. And he did that for the whole 24-hour cycle. So he ended up with just like 2 or 3 hours of sleep. And you can survive on it. But I really doubt that it's a sustainable way to live. And I think everyone just needs to recognize his own needs. I really need, especially my REM sleep. So I have this ring called the Aura Ring, and I measure my sleep cycles. I measure my temperature at night. But what I'm really most interested about is the amount of REM sleep that I get, because I just discovered for myself that the REM sleep is the most important part of the sleep for me to really function properly, to have my cognitive functions, my creativity. I really need my REM sleep. So I really think also if you look at Jeff Bezos, for example, from Amazon, he always says that he sleeps 8 hours per night. He's always in bed before midnight. And I think these are really the role models we should look at.
You mentioned the Aura Ring. I would just like to ask you, you know, how it's been having all that information at your fingertips. I've been wondering about getting one. The hesitation is that I'm a bit of a hypochondriac, so I'm afraid that by knowing too much, I'll start worrying about things that I'm not worried about right now. Is there any truth to the fact that if you have too much information, you might start getting into things that you otherwise wouldn't even think about?
Yes, I think that's a risk, especially now that I'm studying the subconscious mind. I think it can really interfere with your automatic mechanism if you just apply the forebrain or the cognitive brain too much and don't let these automatic mechanisms basically work uninterrupted. But what I discovered, it doesn't affect me that much. And I also am not dependent on the ring. So I only wear it at night. I now stopped wearing it during the day. And I'm really only interested basically in 2 or 3 main data points. So right now what I'm interested in or have been interested in is my body temperature. And you have this trend line that you can see whether your body temperature is a little higher or a little lower. And that really helped me to discover upcoming infections even a few days before they really manifest. So that informs, for example, the intensity of my workouts. If my ring tells me, hey, your body temperature has been 0.3 degrees higher and your restfulness is not as high, then I won't push myself as much during the workout as I maybe did without a ring. And maybe then pushing myself in the workout would have started the infection or would have like been advantages for the infections. So I really use it for that basically most. And then I'm just interested out of curiosity how my REM sleep is doing. But all the other data points I'm not interested in, and I could easily live without it. So I don't see it as a must have, but it's just a nice tool to have this information, body temperature, amount of REM sleep per night. I think it's really a good tool if you're not freaked out about it. So I think it's in the end a personal decision, I would say.
Shifting gears a little bit, you also mentioned the study of stoicism in your first handbook. Tell us more about why stoicism has been helpful to you.
So I've been searching for a life philosophy for a long time, and I basically tried no life philosophy, basically just acting out everything that I learned. That didn't work out well that much. And then I tried Buddhism for 6 years, which I really liked a lot because I believe Buddhists are really very good at studying the brain and how the brain works without modern science, but that just wasn't compatible with my Western lifestyle, with my entrepreneurship and investing. I just always felt a sort of disconnect there, and all the rituals just wasn't my thing. And then I discovered Stoicism. I heard a lot of people, especially in Silicon Valley, California, raving about it. I always thought, what a silly thing, some 2,000-year-old Romans and Greeks, what could I possibly learn from them? It always felt like antiquated and old. But then during one episode of Darkness, I discovered this wonderful book called The Guide to the Good Life by William Irvine, which is a wonderful introduction and overview to the whole Stoic life philosophy. And it just clicked with me. It's super compatible with my Western lifestyle. And what it does, it just changes my perspective. It's really an operating system, how to view the world. So they use a lot of rationality. They use a lot of exercises, for example, dealing with mortality to really keep in mind your own mortality, the mortality of your children, family, friends, so that you can better live in the present moment. And they also talk about humans being a social animal and having a social duty. And that really speaks to me. So basically, Stoicism now, I would say, is my main life philosophy that is most compatible with my lifestyle, and I see it as a perfect companion to the study of the subconscious mind, because the Stoicism like teaches you rationality and getting a proper perspective and getting a proper outlook for life, and then you can apply this rationality to control or to program your subconscious mind. So that's how I see my life philosophy right now. But I can highly recommend studying Stoicism. And if you read Buffett or Munger or any other timeless people that have wisdom, they always go back to Seneca and Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius. So they really had a big impact on a lot of people, and I think it could be worthwhile to study them more deeply.
Stoicism is often associated with minimalism. How do you see that connection? Do you really kind of minimize the stimulants in your life, or is it not necessarily that related?
I would say it's not necessarily related, but of course, if you're interested in minimalism or simplifying your life, so it has a lot to do with simplicity and simplifying your thought processes and also simplifying your life. But on the other hand, Seneca and especially Marcus Aurelius, I mean, he was the most powerful person on earth, and he was a Stoic, and Seneca was a very successful businessman and investment banker and politician, etc. So it is compatible with a more modern Western lifestyle, even a materialistic lifestyle. But you can also apply it for minimalism, or I'm actually more interested in essentialism, to really ask the question, what is important right now, and what is the most important thing, to really peel the onion to get to the core. And I think this connection for me personally is more important.
In terms of just shifting gears, one other piece of your book that I found interesting was the topic of finding a good therapist. It's kind of a sensitive subject, and I admit I really hesitated on going down that route just because I have preconceived notions or think that I should be able to figure out things on my own. But so I'd love to hear from you about why it's helpful and how one should go about that.
Yeah, I struggle with that topic myself as well, because I've tried several therapists, and in the end it didn't work out for me. So I just the connection was not there. I felt that I wasn't benefiting as much, and just the cost benefit analysis didn't work for me. So in the end I recognized from this experience that personally I like to have mentors and coaches and therapists, but not in person. I like to have them in books. I like to have them in videos or whatever. So I discovered from this experience that I'm more a book person. And for example, during this one time when I was with a therapist, I discovered Stoicism at the same time. And I just saw this disconnection. Stoicism helped me so much more, helped me 10 times, 20 times more than the therapist. And then I had this cognitive dissonance where I went to the session every week. And at the same time at home, I was learning so much more. So in the end, then I decided to stop all therapy and focus on the books in my particular case. But if I ever would search for another therapist, I would really recommend a process that I learned from another unrelated book. It's basically to experiment a lot, because a therapist is a human being, and the personal connection needs to be there. You need to trust him. You need to, in a certain way, look up to him or just have respect for him, etc. So I would really recommend to go broad at the beginning. So for example, do a first consultation with 5 or 7 or even 10 therapists in as many different philosophies and approaches as possible, because there are so many therapeutic avenues you can take. You can take cognitive therapy or logotherapy or autosuggestion, hypnosis, all kinds of different things. So I would just try them out all. And then I would I wouldn't return to those therapists where I just had a bad gut feeling about in the first place, and then just pick like a recruiting process. Basically, then pick a few finalists, do multiple additional consultations each, and then really just go with my gut feeling. That would be the process that I would do if I would embark on this again. But right now or in the past, I also have been just a little lazy to do it, because usually you wait until you're really in a bad spot. But when you're in a bad spot, you don't have the energy to do this recruiting process, right? So the better way would be to prepare yourself when you're actually feeling good to really do this work and go through this recruiting process, so you're then prepared when the bad spot hits. But the other thing actually that helped me before that are self-help groups, which is a related topic. But basically, I've been going to self-help groups for multiple years, and these were groups without a therapist, so completely self-guided. And there are a lot of different groups. Every city has them, either a 12-step group in all kinds of different flavors, or just regular self-help groups. And I really loved this collective energy in this group. So it really takes the first meeting, the first time you go there, it really takes all your courage, because everything is new and you don't know how you will be welcomed, etc. But it's really worth it to try it if you feel that a collective group experience could be beneficial to you. So I would maybe first go with the self-help group, and then maybe if before you're in a really bad spot, to really do this work to find a good therapist.
Great. Well, that's very helpful, and I'm happy to hear that you're not dogmatic about any of these approaches, but it really depends on the person and what one can get out of that, I guess.
Absolutely. And the more I learn, it's really also my whole life handbook series. I see it as a work in progress, right? I'm still fairly young and I have a ton more to learn. So it's just a continuous learning process. And that's what I'm really passionate about. I'm passionate about learning, about finding new ways, new wisdom, new heuristics, and I'm learning all the time more. So right now, I would, if I would search for a therapist, I would probably want somebody who is fluent in psycho-cybernetics, or I would somebody who is a really good hypnotist, or somebody who is really good with autosuggestion, because I really believe now that I would like to work, if I would work with somebody, I would like to work with on my subconscious. And before that, I was just doing standard cognitive therapy, which is great as well, but I just felt wasn't going as deep for me. So I would really encourage to just open the radar and try as many approaches as possible.
Remo, I'd love to hear about what other books you're working on. What will be part of this series?
So the general outline is this four-word mantra that I have: health, wealth, love, and happiness. And to give just a little bit more context, what I mean by that is, why health first? Health first, because without it, basically nothing matters. And wealth, not for wealth's sake, but to buy freedom and to do good and be useful. And love, not just romantic love, but friendship, companionship, unconditional love, etc. And then happiness, not just pleasure, but also a deep sense of contentment, peace of mind, and creative expression. So I basically have these four big life themes that I then just will break down into smaller, more digestible pieces. For example, I could imagine writing a handbook about the subconscious mind. I could imagine a handbook about sleep. So basically everything that I find useful for my own life, what would benefit me, I would just write a short handbook about, and I definitely want to also write more about my wealth process. Like I would like to put my investment philosophy into writing, how I see that part of the equation. So it's basically, first I thought I would just create one huge life handbook that would be like this big compendium, like 1,000 pages or something. But then I just realized it's much easier for me to write shorter ones, and probably also for the readers much easier to read shorter ones on each particular topic. So that's my outline, and I see where I take it from here.
Great. Well, certainly look forward to reading the upcoming books that you will share. I agree, it's a learning process, and we're all in this together, as it were. Thank you so much for being so open and sharing your own life journey and learning process with all of us. It's really remarkable, and I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
And I'll just mention to everyone listening, Ramo's first book in the Life Handbook series is actually available on Amazon. I think if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can get it for free. And I would encourage everyone to take a look at that. And also, of course, Ramo's blog at ramo.org. Ramo, thank you so much for your time. All the best to you.
Thank you, John. Likewise.
Goodbye for now.